Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, one and all, to Web Sleuth Radio. My name is Tricia Griffith, the very proud owner of WebSleuth.com. If I do say so myself, one of the very best, if not the very best, true crime discussion forum on the internet. And tonight on Web Sleuth Radio, we welcome back an old friend, Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. Cheryl is going to give us all the details in the hunt for the Tampa Bay killer. I think it's safe to call him the Tampa Bay serial killer now. He's so terrifying. He literally walks up to strangers and shoots them. That's what he that talk about. Terrifying. They do have a video of him. It's very hard to see who he is, but we're hoping that somebody recognizes this monster and it stops quick. Cheryl will be up here in just a little bit to give us all the background details and all the stuff we need to know about the Tampa Bay serial killer. But first up, here's a story of two internet sleuths. Okay, that was my Brady Bunch song imitation there. But it is a story of two internet sleuths. Sorry, that was really obnoxious. Anyway, they came together and were able to identify a woman who had been missing since 1975. Let's welcome Carl K and Ice 190, also known as Christina. Carl, welcome. Let's see. I know they're there. Oh dear, here we go.
Hello.
Carl, there you are. How are you? And Christina, sorry, that was my fault. I put you on mute, which is not a good thing when you're doing an interview. Okay, everybody,
we're
going
to
start.
Show,
oh, Carl, it's always great to have you on. You're always doing something amazing, and I swear you could be on every week, and we could just talk to you and Christina with work that she does as well. But we're going to go to one particular story. And this goes back to actually 1975. This is where the missing woman, she went missing in 1975. Let's kind of fast forward to Let's fast forward to 2015, to Christina first, Ice 190. Christina, you were into genealogy and you were trying to find out some things about your family tree. How did you end up becoming a sleuth on this missing persons case?
Well, I was stuck in behind what we call a brick wall in genealogy, or kind of can't just get much further. So I was just, you know, lost with the next step, and I decided to just go through the cemetery record, seeing if my family member could be listed under a different name or possibly unidentified. And that's where I came across the listing for unknown human female bones.
And then what did you do when you saw that? Why did you stop and go, this might be something I'm interested in? What made you, compelled you to move on with that discovery?
Well, I noticed that this discovery was in Strongsville, Ohio, probably 15 minutes away from my hometown. In fact, where I was still living at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And due to the estimated age, they estimated her to be a late teenager, which I myself was at the time. And that, you know, I thought to myself, that could be me right now, had it been 40 years ago.
And so you thought, well, I'm going to go with this and see what I can find. Where do you start with something like that? You just have unidentified bones buried and a date. How do you start looking for the identity of this person or anything about this person? How do you go about it?
You know, I wasn't real sure to begin with either, because up to that time I have never done anything, you know, similar to this. I would passively read stuff on Web Sleuth and the Reddit forum, you know, about other cases like Jason Callahan. But what I did is I contacted the cemetery to verify, you know, just find out if there was really still an unidentified person buried there, and if there has been no change to those records. And they told me that it's correct and there's been nothing different since she was buried.
But you didn't get much help, right? People weren't really knocking down your door to help you find out information, correct?
They they did what they could up until a certain point, and then they kind of wanted me to, you know, back off. I called a few different. What I did was I actually went to the library, and I just looked up the date. You know, the date that she was interred, and I believe that was May 13th or something along those lines. And that, you know, I was able to find it in the date, you know, and then it linked me to a newspaper article, which then took me to, you know, her estimated death. So I went back into that, you know, April 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
It was April 3rd or February. So I get these dates.
February, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, February. Yeah. So I went back there, and that's when I found a handful of articles, a bunch, sadly describing, you know, how they still haven't identified her, and worst of all, how nobody was willing to pay for her burial due to jurisdictional bureaucracy.
Uh-huh. That's sad, but you did find... Oh, please continue. I'm sorry.
Oh, she was found in the Cleveland Metro Park, which is part of Cuyahoga County. It's the Metro Park Rangers, that their police force to, you know, take care of everything in that part. But then she was also found within the Metro Parks, which is in the Strongsville jurisdiction, which is why it was mentioned that she was found in Strongsville. Now, then I call the Strongsville police. They have no clue what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I called Berea, which is a neighboring town just very, very close to where she was found, as a matter of fact. And they actually suggested I call the Rangers next. So that's what I did. And after that, I called the Metro Park Rangers and got in touch with Don Silvis, lieutenant detective. And he was more than willing. He must have been bored that day or something. But he got to me the next day. Yeah, he got to me the next day. He said he had to go dig these things, you know, out of an attic somewhere. And he had a case file that was almost an inch thick from back then when they were trying to figure out who she was.
Mm-hmm. And so you post this stuff on Reddit, which, by the way, I think Reddit and Web Sleuths, I love it when we work together, when people go use both to try and help solve something. I love Reddit. I really do. It's a great forum. A lot different than Web Sleuths, but it is good for the community of true crime. So anyway, you post all of this great information. You upload these files on Reddit. Somebody steals them, and not steals, but borrows them, and puts them on Web Sleuths. Do I have that correct?
Yes, they actually messaged me within Reddit, and I said, yes, please do, because I think I was unable to post due to being a new user for a certain period of time, to when I wasn't able to create my own thread, per se.
Got it.
They posted
that
for me.
Well, that's good, and I appreciate you giving permission to do that, because there's no reason why we can't share, especially when it's for the good of everybody. And so Carl K., who has helped with many unidentified cases due to his incredible forensic drawings of the victims, is amazing. So you see this, Carl, and then what do you do?
Well, yeah, the whole Web Sleuth unidentified, you know, forum community, you know, started working on this, and everybody was really interested in it, and they were trying. They were going through a lot of possible matches, and eventually Christina got a hold of the case file, and got a whole lot of information on that case from the case file. There was, you know, she said 100 pages of information there, and so we started digging into it and going through all the, you know, possible matches, and you know, there were some interesting possibles, but nothing that really looked like, you know, okay, this looks like the person. I had a couple of interesting ones, but you know, nobody that really looked spot on. But But eventually Christina got a hold of, I think she got a hold of, who was it? Somebody from the forensic institute or something?
No, it was the Cuyahoga County Medical Examiner's Office. And that, you know, I asked them, I'm like, do you have any record of this? Because the Metro
Well, no, I mean the photos, didn't you get that from, there was a forensic dentistry organization or something that had all of the coroner's photos?
Oh, that actually Lieutenant Don was the one who contacted the medical examiners, and he was able to get a lot more information from that. And then, yes, I did find that the dentals was actually sent, I believe, with a whole skull to, and I forgot the gentleman's name, but he's still around, the Case mm-hmm. Western Medical School of Dentistry, and he was just like an adjunct faculty still, but unfortunately he could not remember the case, seeing it 40 years.
So you got these pictures. Carl, is that when you started to come up with your drawing?
Yeah, well, she came up with these photos, and the photos were, you know, there were maybe five or six photos, and they were just of this muddy skeleton, and there were no mm-hmm. real direct photos of the skeleton, no frontal photos of the skeleton. They were all kind of, you know, various photos taken from oblique angles. And so for a few months, I was thinking to myself, oh, I can't do anything with this. This is, you know, there's no mandible on there. Most of her teeth
right.
are gone.
I was pleading with him.
And he's saying, I can't do it, I can't do it. And Christina, you know, you're thinking, of course you can, Carl. Just give it a try.
Heck yeah.
That's our, yeah, exactly.
So anyway, so, she eventually, after about 3 months, I think that Christina started talking about, well, I got this, you know, computer program that does this. And I finally said, well, what the hell? Let me see if I can try to do something with this. And so I eventually, you know, I spent about a day on it and came up with this image. And, you know, I actually, as I saw myself, I was kind of pleased with, okay, this, you know, this looks mm-hmm. plausible. This looks like, you know, it incorporates the features that I can see from that photo. So, I went ahead and put that on Web Sleuth, and we came up with one possible match, but, again, you know, it didn't look like a real strong possible, but, you know, she, mm-hmm. there were people who kind of looked like the image that I had, but then, yeah, what happened then? I got a call, I think about a month later, I got a call from Angie Fisher from the Cuyahoga County Medical Examiner's Office, and she had said mm-hmm. She wanted me she wanted to use one of my facial reconstructions for a John Doe that would have been found in Euclid, a guy who had fallen off a cliff mm-hmm. in Euclid, and that was back in 1981. I had a facial reconstruction of him, and she wanted to use that. So, you know, I said, yeah, sure, go ahead. But by the way, do you know anything about this Strongsville bones? She says, oh, I don't know anything about any bones in Strongsville. And so I went ahead and gave her the case number. Mm-hmm. And she went and looked it up in the system and said, hey, wow, that's interesting. The case, the little flag on there that shows status is supposed to say unidentified, is spelled wrong. So her mm-hmm. program that was supposed to have picked up the, you know, to pick up all of their unidentified cases in the system didn't pick up that one because the word unidentified was spelled incorrectly.
Uh-huh. My God.
So, you know, she said, okay, go ahead and put that in NamUs. She found the case mm-hmm. file and put the information into NamUs. And just coincidentally, in Akron, there was a new detective who had been just assigned to a new position as a missing person for juvenile cases.
Mm-hmm.
And he had gotten training on the use of NamUs. And so he started keying in his old cold cases from, you know, that he had been assigned. And his oldest cold case was this girl, Linda Pagano. And
mm-hmm.
So as soon as he put it in, it came up with a hit on the Strongsville case that Angie Fisher had just put into Namus like a month earlier. And so at the same time, you know, once it went on to Namus, I had seen that come up on Namus, the missing persons listing for Linda Pagano. And, you know, I said to myself, that looks exactly like my drawing.
Let me get this straight, and Christina, feel free to jump in here. All you have basically is a skeleton, and you have a skull but with no lower jaw. And you were able to draw this picture, which, by the way, when you go on Web Sleuth into the Unidentified, you can find it there, and it is an amazing likeness. Carl, how do you do that? You don't have the skull there. You don't put the clay little dots on it and then build a head like they do.
No, I don't. I can't. I don't have all the tools that a normal. It's just, I kind of cut out the actual skull from the rest of the photo and clean it up and trim it up and then just build a face around it. I could see from the skull that she had kind of an interesting, kind of an unusual looking curvature in her nose. And and she had sort of her lower face was projected more so than most Caucasian faces. She was classified as a Caucasian, yet she was, had what you call a prognathic maxilla, which means it's, you know, the mouth projects a little further forward than the eyes and nose, or than the eyes and forehead, that is. And so, you know, it's just a matter of spot by spot going through and, developing a face and giving it a look that's, you know, compatible with what they said was somebody between, say, 16 and 20 years old. And so, you know, that's what I came up with. And and then when the photo of Linda Pagano came up on Namus, it was like, that's her. That's looks just like the image that I had done.
Exactly. And Christina, what did you think when you saw the picture and the picture of Linda Pagano?
Pretty much I metaphorically spat out my coffee in amazement.
Exactly. I just feel like it's, Carl, you have a gift, and I'm not trying to get all woo-woo and spiritual here on you, but it's like you have a gift that you can see things that we can't. Your brain processes the vision of these skulls in ways that nobody else can do. And you should be getting paid huge bucks just to sit and do this all day long for people, and I don't know why you're not.
Totally.
But and then Christina can be there and do all the research and get all the stuff for you, and you guys would make a great team that way. So now we know. How do we know it's Linda Pagano? What happened?
Well, we don't know it's Linda Pagano for sure, but I mean, yeah, I need to make that clear that there hasn't been a positive ID, but she matched. They did a dental comparison, and the dentals were consistent. They weren't, you can't do a positive ID just based on a dental chart.
Right.
There were only 5 teeth left on the skull, and they all had fillings, and for reasons that are a little more complex to explain here. But you can't, with circumstances like that, you can't just you can't do a positive
can't say
ID.
That's definitely her. Right.
Yeah. Right.
But didn't a family member? Oh, I'm sorry, Christina. Go ahead.
I was going to say, but, the fact that the fillings and all the other characteristics, height, approximate slim build, that all fit in with Linda Pagano.
Okay. So, but didn't somebody come forward and say, hey, I know that person?
Well,
who was that?
No, I think the detective had flagged that case just from entering it into Namus, and the Strongsville case that had just been entered a month earlier came up as a strong possible match. I don't think the detective hadn't seen my image, but that just, when she came up, when the case file came up in Namus, when they published her case, I you know, I thought to myself, oh, this looks just like Linda Pagano, or it just looks mm-hmm. just like the Jane Doe. And so when I called up Angie at the coroner's office, she said, the Akron police are right on this case. They're very mm-hmm. interested in this, you know, so they already had flagged it as a possible match, and they were right on it.
But didn't her sister contact you? What about her? No?
Yeah, that's what happened was the sister had contacted me and said that the detective had said that it was a positive ID. And I guess, you know, the coroner's office got a little upset with me because I had gone and announced that it was a positive ID. But when they, you know, they still need to do DNA testing. But they still need to exhume the remains. But her sister said,
that's her. That's Linda, right?
Yeah. The family believes very, very much so. They believe that this is Linda.
It will be very surprising if it's not. It'll be very shocking. Christina, what were the circumstances? Were they able to determine a cause of death?
It was a .22 caliber bullet wound to the, I believe it was the left temple, at an angle that would rule out suicide.
Okay, that's what I'm going to say. So it looks like murder. Do you know if the police are investigating any suspects yet, or are they waiting for the DNA? Do you have any idea?
They are doing both. It's probably like 70-30 to mm-hmm. finding, you know, proving the identity versus finding out the culprit. And that's due mostly to the siblings' hunch that they've had for, you know, 40 years. Over 40 mm-hmm. years now, as well as the circumstances involving Linda's disappearance, and that would have to do with her stepfather, her late stepfather.
Oh, really?
You know, so him not being around anymore. It's kind of on the back burner.
Right.
You know, the family just wants closure at this time.
Of course. Are you still in touch with Lieutenant Silvis?
Here and there, I do, you know, text him what's going on. Usually he tells me, yeah, I already know. So he's definitely right up there with the coroner doing something, I think. Probably because it's his jurisdiction. He knows what's going on a lot. Now, Detective Jeffrey Smith with Akron, he kind of gets the news, and from what I can feel, kind of gets the news, like, second behind Don. And then that's where it disseminates from there to the family and then me and the media.
Got it. That's good. I'm glad there is still some contact there so we can keep an eye on what's happening. So, Carl, the family was obviously grateful, but they are waiting for the DNA testing. Do you have any idea how long that's going to take?
Well, they had tried initially and ended up digging up the wrong body. And so there was another delay while they checked their records again and tried to see where, you know, which body they actually did dig up. And, you know, in order to know where to dig next, you got to know what you actually did dig up. So there was another delay, and, you know, I got word, you know, just about a month ago that from Linda's sister that she had been notified that they did dig again and found the right bones. So
they did get it right.
Yeah, and so now it's being sent to the University of North Texas. They do all the DNA testing, and hopefully, you know, with bones that have been sitting there for, you know, close to 50 years or 40 years, there's no telling what kind of shape they're in or whether they can get DNA out of the bones. But, and, you know, there's been issues with funding, so they resolved their funding issue, but now there's a backlog as a result, and because there was a break in funding, so, you know, there's no telling how long this will actually take, but,
I wonder if we could do a fundraiser and maybe get, I don't know how much it would cost per DNA test.
I don't think currently funding is is the issue. It's just a matter of getting through their backlog. I mean, they have the funding to do it now. I mean, up until September, there was a funding issue, but the funding was finally approved in Congress, and so they're now able to, resume what they were doing. But in the meantime, a lot of cases built up. So there's another case I've been waiting over a year for an answer on, mm-hmm. and, their family is getting a little impatient as well. So,
I can imagine. That's very frustrating to know that they can have that information just sitting there, but they can't do anything because of the backlog. And all that information could very easily break cases wide open and solve cases. So I can just imagine the frustration that the families must feel, especially in cold cases. Christina, what's next for you? I mean, this is quite a big feather in your cap, and I know you certainly weren't looking for anything like that. You just wanted to help. But is this kind of turned your direction in life? Are you going to do something else?
To be honest, I've always kind of been interested in the unidentified and to a lesser degree, missing persons case. Mostly to the Cleveland, Ohio area, where back in 1951, Beverly Potts, 10-year-old girl, disappeared. And I read the novel by James Justin Bedell, and from there I was just, dead set, like, I want to do something like this. I'm determined to find Beverly before I die. It's that, and, there's the Cleveland Torso serial killing back in the 30s.
See, that would be amazing if you could do something with that.
Oh, yeah. It's like my dream. Now, coincidentally, all but I think three of those victims are buried in the same field that Linda Pagano, we assume, has been buried in. Now, I've been to that cemetery, and it's kind of, it's just completely disorganized at some point. It's run by the city of Cleveland, even though I don't believe it's in city limits. Now, I had asked for a map of the cemetery, and they said, sorry, we can't give that out to the public. So that's
why.
So when you say that, I don't know, but then you think, this is like probably 3 years later at that point, when they say, oops, we dug up the wrong body, it looks like that their mapping was completely off.
Right.
Yeah,
but then again, I'm thinking, why didn't she look at the skull for a bullet wound? You think that'd be a dead giveaway.
Well, yeah, exactly. And what were you going to say, Carl?
Yeah, I was going to say, fortunately, they looked again. I know of one case in Mississippi where the same thing happened, where they tried to exhume an unidentified female that was found in Mississippi, and the family was waiting for answers, and they'd ended up digging up the wrong body, and then they just decided, forget it, we're not going to bother, and left the family guessing as to, it's just like, tough luck, we screwed up.
Right.
But,
my gosh.
So... that's happened on a few occasions, I guess, with these Potter's Fields, especially back in the 70s, that nobody was really anticipating that they'd ever have to deal with these things anymore. And they just, they didn't keep real, real good, solid records. So,
exactly.
I mean, that's not all unusual for, them to have difficulty, finding these bodies again once they're buried in unmarked graves.
And see, that's where Christina and Carl come in, because they can team up, work together, and get everybody's stuff straightened out. I'm telling you guys, you're just a powerhouse. You're a TV series waiting to happen, if I'm not mistaken. Hey, Christina, thank you so much, and thank you for being so gracious to allow your files to be shared at Web Sleuth. And if Web Sleuth can ever do the same for Reddit, let us know. I think it's great that we work together like that. So, Christina, good luck with everything, and keep in touch, okay?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Tricia. And
And Carl, we all adore you, and you have no choice but to keep in touch, because if you don't, we will stalk you, basically. So just keep up the good work. Just keep up the good work, Carl, okay?
Okay, great. Nice talking to you, and have a good
take
day.
Take care.
Yeah, bye.
You too, my dear. Bye-bye. Okay, there you go. Carl K. from Web Sleuth and Ice190 Christina from Reddit. And now we're going to bring on our incredibly wonderful, witty, intelligent friend, Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. Hi, Cheryl.
Hey, how's everybody?
Oh, we're doing great. It's so good for you to call in and take time off to help us get caught up on this crazy, crazy serial killer. Cheryl, all serial killers are terrifying, but what is your worst nightmare being out in public and having somebody walk up, hold a gun, and shoot you just randomly? That creates a whole new kind of terror, and that's what's going on in Tampa Bay, right?
Yes. I mean, I'm telling you, it's a little bit different than some of the serial killers of the past. There's no doubt about it. He's got a different M.O., and so it's something that I know that the FBI is looking at closely because he's doing things a little different. There's three things that kind of stick out to me. There's no sexual component. So normally when you have a Ted Bundy or a John Wayne Gacy, they also sexually assault their victims. And he's not doing that. And he's also not spending a lot of time with those victims. I mean, he's shooting them, they're falling, and he's running away. So that's really unusual. So there's no, you know, gratification there at the scene, if that makes sense to you. And then
Absolutely.
So far, they've all been attacked almost from the back where they don't even know what's happening. Whereas a lot of serial killers, we have learned, they wanted their victims to know what was going to happen. And they took great pride almost in watching that horror. Well, he doesn't have that either. He's literally kind of like sneaking up behind them and shooting them, and that's it, running.
Again, that just kind of throws all of the FBI profiles and all what we know about serial killers, just kind of tosses it up and makes it go in 18 different directions. And there is no connection between these four that we know of, right, Cheryl?
No, there's not going to be any connection with the victim. He doesn't even know anything about them. And that's another thing that's really interesting. It is completely opportunistic. I mean, they're just literally in the wrong place at the wrong time. He didn't stalk them for very long. He didn't choose them. They just were there, and he's like, you're good enough. So, again, that's really unusual. And I had a conversation with Nancy Grace about it, and I told Nancy that he almost has more of a free killer feel than a serial killer feel.
A very, very slow spree killer, almost, yeah.
Right. And that's one of the reasons I told Nancy I was very confident he was going to be young and he was going to be African-American. Because the victims, he cares less about the who than the surprise attack. So, you know, it does seem like a very young person. It seems like somebody that, you know, just reacts. So...
Cheryl, can I ask you to speak up just a little bit for me? I'm getting old. My hearing is bad, and you know how it goes.
Is that any better?
But, okay, that's much better. Thank you. So this person you said was a young guy and African American, and he's young because you think he's young because of the element of surprise, and he has to be quick, and he has to run. I'm surprised that this is an African American. Usually, it's a white male. I mean, we all know the drill. But like you said, this doesn't seem like serial killing. It seems more like spree killing, but on a very slow time frame.
But let me clear something up. Your group is a whole lot more sophisticated than your average, you know, person listening in an audience. So the deal is, any group is going to have a serial killer. Most serial killers kill their own race. So anytime you have a majority of one victim, whatever they look like, chances are that's going to be your serial killer. So again,
you've had
Jean Carl Watt, we've had Wayne Williams, plenty of African-American serial killers. The deal is the majority are going to be Caucasian. Well, the majority of the population is Caucasian. That comes down to math. It's not that they don't exist. So, again, you've got to start with the victim.
Exactly.
But he's almost doing this,
Tricia. Right.
He's almost doing it like a video game.
Really? What makes you say that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's just walking down the street. He sees somebody. He shoots them, and he's done. That's it. There's nothing mm-hmm. else to that crime. And so, again, normally people shoot somebody because they're going to sexually assault them, they're going to rob them, or that person has done them wrong. He's mm-hmm. literally just shooting you. There's no reason. There's no gratification that he's getting there at the scene.
At
so another
that
thing
scene.
That I'm going to be really interested when they catch him, and they will catch him, is whether he has anything videotaped on his phone, because I think he does.
There you go. He could actually be wearing even a small body camera. And
sure, he could have a
relive
GoPro.
It.
But he,
sure.
Yep, he could. Yep. So the gratification for him may be delayed.
And here's the thing, Cheryl. This is absolutely, to me anyway, one of the most terrifying scenarios we could ever imagine. How helpless are we to be standing somewhere in public and have somebody come up and shoot you in the head? You can't prepare for it. You can't watch out for it. He comes up from behind. Unless you
sure.
just lock yourself in your house, that's the only guarantee you can be safe. He is creating, I imagine, such a terror in that community, and I'm sure he gets off on that too. That's pretty powerful, right?
Right. And I tell you, I think the law enforcement needs to seek him out based on that. In other words,
mm-hmm.
somebody knows you're a punk. Nobody thinks you're a badass. Nobody thinks you're going to be some, oh my God, he's like the Night Stalker. He's like the Son of Sam. No. You're a
mm-hmm.
kid who doesn't even have the guts to face somebody man to man, so to speak, toe to toe. So
mm-hmm.
I honestly think they should start to draw him out. They're going to catch him. He doesn't have a car. He doesn't have a bike. He's going to be right there. If you look at the four crimes and you're looking at a map,
mm-hmm.
on the right side of the map, he starts at the top right. Then he crisscrosses down to the left bottom. Then he goes
mm-hmm.
back to the right bottom. Then he goes to the left
mm-hmm.
top. So he's crisscrossing. He's right in the center of that map. He lives right there, probably a little bit closer to the first victim than anybody else, but I promise
mm-hmm.
you he's within walking distance.
Oh,
as the crow flies,
just...
he knows his getaway. You know, and again, Trisha, it's
run.
No different than, like, drunk driving. I mean, there's all kind of crimes that just out of the blue get you, and you cannot
yes.
prepare for it, and you can't prevent it, not from the victim side anyway. But I'm telling
mm-hmm.
you, they're going to catch him, and it's not going to be, you know, too much longer, I don't believe.
Oh, I hope you're right. And also, does he do it in the day or night, or does it matter?
He does it in the dark. So it's
it in the dark.
From like
okay.
9 p.m. to about 4 a.m.
Huh. Oh, the
so
video.
So here's the deal.
They
the victims are always alone.
Okay.
Right? The victims
right.
are standing when they're shot. Most of them, I think, if not all of them, have been from the back. They've been walking
mm-hmm.
somewhere near a bus route or standing near a bus route. They've all been from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. The first two
mm-hmm.
were like right at 9 o'clock, real close together. I believe it's the same caliber weapon. That's how they've been able to link these things together.
Okay.
When it all comes out, I think position of the wound is going to be consistent. He's done it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a headshot just to make sure the deal's done.
Mm-hmm.
And this type of killer, he's what we would classify as a hunter. So what that means
oh.
is he commits the crime where he lives.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he locates that victim, he just attacks. Like, there's not a lot of thought in it. He's not looking like Ted Bundy for a type. He's just looking for the opportunity. That's it.
The video they have of this person, they've come out and said he's the suspect, and it's pretty grainy. It's hard to
sure.
see. Do you think there is any way somebody could identify him from that video? I guess if you would recognize
absolutely.
The walk.
Absolutely.
Okay.
The walk is very distinct. That walk
mm-hmm.
is very distinct. And we know he's right-handed. The way he manipulates the phone in the first video, he's right-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And that coat, somebody's going to notice that guy. Now, probably he's going to be a loner, so he's not out and about. He's not going to have a ton of friends. He's probably
mm-hmm.
not going to have a long criminal history, if any. You know, these type of killers tend not to even be on law enforcement radar until all of a sudden they come from nowhere. And that's why they're very difficult to catch, because we don't know who the hell they are. So Ted Bundy was unknown. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh,
Green
boy,
River,
do I ever.
Unknown. Yeah.
Just your description, Cheryl. And by the way, we're talking with Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute about the Tampa Bay serial killer or spree shooter, depends. Person just walks up to somebody, usually at night, and shoots them in the head and runs. Absolutely terrifying. Four people have been killed this way in the Tampa Bay area, and they do have a video of him. But, again, kind of hard to see, but hopefully someone will be able to at least recognize this, the way this person walks. But what I was going to say, Cheryl, just listening to kind of your description of this guy, especially how the police should catch him by coming out and saying, you're a punk, we're not afraid of you, you're not getting, don't get anything off of this. It's almost like you have to wonder, is this guy out to prove something to somebody? Has somebody just hurt his manhood in such a way that he's got to take it out on somebody? And when they catch him, I think that'll be very interesting to find out what triggered this. Something had to trigger it, don't you think?
Oh, there's no question.
And I don't think he went around like a he wasn't like a nice normal guy, but something triggered this reaction.
Yes, no question about it. It could be something as simple to us, simple as getting laid off or having somebody break up with him but did it publicly or in a way that he was, you know, really humiliated. Like maybe he asked somebody to marry him public and she not only rejected him but embarrassed him.
Right.
Something, there's no question, started this violent string of murders for seemingly absolutely no reason. These victims did nothing to him. They didn't know him. They didn't even know it was coming. So I think that's what's very fascinating. It's terrifying, but it's fascinating to us that are criminologists because, you know, you don't see this all the time. I mean, we certainly had Son of Sam. You know, we've had other people that walked up with the, you know, Bulldog 44 and shot people for no reason. I mean, we've had it happen before, so there is a playbook. But what we notice there is, again, Son of Sam gave himself the nickname. And that's why I'm telling you, whether he's checking his phone, whether he's videotaping it, whether he's doing something to where he's getting some type of notoriety, I believe. Because he's got to have something that's feeding him to do it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's going to be, I think, another fascinating thing that we can learn. It's not fascinating in a good way. It's just fascinating that here's another type of killer that we need to have on our log, on our sheet, so we can check it off. So is there anything linking the victims? Are they in the same age group? Are they all male, half female?
Nope.
Where were they when they're just absolutely totally random as far as anybody can tell?
They're totally random. However, he does have a victim preference. His preference is clearly black males. Of the four, three fit that profile. But the ages are different. So they're every, you know, from like, you know, 30 to 60. But then you have a white female in the mix. So that doesn't fit at all if you're looking at a traditional serial killer. But again, Jeffrey Dahmer put that out the window. So Jeffrey Dahmer had a type as well. Exactly. But he had white, black, Pan-Asian. But he had a system, and his was clearly for sexual gratification. Where, again, this person has not touched the victims that we know of. But listen, going to catch him, and they're going to, I'm sure, they're going to come up with a way that draws him out. He's going to make a mistake. Because think of the response time already. The response time is already 1 minute. That is unbelievable. They have already started to go door to door, which is something I firmly believe they need to do. They need to talk to landlords. This person does not own a home. He rents. And he's no trouble. I'm telling you, nobody's thinking of this guy. And again, anybody, you're not talking about everything happening at 3 a.m. I mean, you're talking about 9 o'clock at night. That's not even late.
When there's
you know,
people out,
right.
People out that can see him. I just had a question text to me, and it's a good one. What about some sort of initiation into a gang? Could this possibly be what he's doing?
That's a great question, and the answer is very probably not, because in order to be blessed in, it just takes one. And
mm-hmm.
The victims don't meet anything that is like a gang hit. Like, this is not
right.
retaliation. One of the victims was mentally challenged. None of them
mm-hmm.
had any money taken. I mean, none of that adds up, none of that fits. And the thing is, at this point, it's pretty evident this is the work of just one person. And again, if it were a gang, it would be a drive-by. It would be something
mm-hmm.
we would recognize. This guy's on foot, and he's running, you know, a path that he knows. He knows that area. He's very
comfortable. Oh, he's got to know, inside and out. He's
yep,
got to know
okay.
where he can duck in, where he can hide, all
yep.
of that.
Yep.
And he doesn't have, that's interesting, he doesn't have a bike, he doesn't have a car. Do you think
nope.
he might have a car or a bike in his regular life and is just not using it, or do you think he literally doesn't have one?
He may, but in a situation like this, a car or a bicycle might actually slow him down, because
mm-hmm.
he would have to maneuver that in some way, whereas here, he can dart and dive and hide and cut quicker than he could. Like, I'm telling you, he is so comfortable in that area. He's been in that area for a while. He knows that neighborhood. It's not grown up there.
This is going to be very interesting when he is caught, and I believe you, Cheryl, they will catch him, to find out.
Oh, they will.
Again, I'm not talking about, you know, he didn't get enough hugs in his childhood. That's not what I'm talking about. But it'll be interesting to see what type of childhood he had. Was it like the other serial killers where they tortured animals and, you know, you kind of knew
yeah.
this person was growing up weird? Or literally was just something that inside him snapped, and this is what he decided to do to handle his stress.
Well, I will say this, Tricia. You're
uh-huh.
right about that, but you find his third grade teacher, she won't be surprised.
Really?
Guaranteed.
That is going to be, to me,
there's
that's going to be interesting. Right.
Yeah, there's something
and that
happens, and it happens early.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a great way for us to intervene early on when we can identify what that is that happens to
yep.
them early. Well, if we can somehow even come up with criteria or something where we can step in and stop these monsters from being created. After he kills, do you think he feels a sense of relief, and then it builds up and builds up and builds up, and he has to go kill again to get that same thrill? Is that what we're seeing?
Oftentimes that's the case. Here's what happens generally. There is the buildup, and it's almost like sex, really. There's the buildup, there's the anticipation, you just can't wait, and then when it's over, yeah, you're pretty relaxed about it. It's pretty good.
It is,
but then you
like
want
sex,
it again.
Yeah. Right.
It is absolutely.
Right.
So a lot of times it's a physical reaction. I mean, they are reacting physically to this need, and that's why,
mm-hmm.
again, when you hear serial killer, typically they're also rapists. They just don't say it that way. It's not termed that way. But again,
mm-hmm.
whether it's Bundy or Gacy or, you know, any of them, usually Dahmer, they have sexually assaulted their victims. So they usually kind of go hand in hand. And it usually
right.
happens simultaneously. Well, here we don't have that. And that's why I'm saying it's more like a spree killer. It feels
mm-hmm.
that way to me. More like, remember when you and I were talking during the DC Sniper case?
Right,
I told you
right.
then that was a spree killer. That's not a serial killer. Because the victims
yep,
are so different. Well, that's how this feels.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, again, he's going to make a mistake. And what I would like to see them do is put police officers out in plain clothes, you know, put police officers out at cash registers, at stores,
mm-hmm.
you know, they've already got helicopters, they've already got dogs, they've already got the feds. I mean, they're doing everything picture perfect, you know, but when when you're the cockroach that's hiding, I mean, it's just hard to catch them. That's all there is.
Yep. Don't you think, though, there is a possibility this could have a sexual element? Maybe this is what turns him on sexually, is having this power and doing it. Possible or not?
It could, and that's what I said earlier. If he's videoing it on his phone, let's say, or he's mm-hmm. running home and watching the news or whatever it is, he's delaying his gratification. But if he's a serial killer, it'll have that component.
Got it. Okay.
But I'm saying he's not doing it there at the scene. He's not snatching the victim and choking them while he sexually assaults them. He's not masturbating at the scene. He is shooting them mm-hmm. and running. So it's a very
right.
different killer than what we've seen in recent history. Anyway. But again,
do you think he has a job?
He's got other people that have done this.
Right. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Do you think he has a job?
I think he had one. I don't know that he keeps mm-hmm. one.
Yeah, right.
I don't really think that he's, he's not at IBM or anything. I think
he's
if he has a job,
scientist.
It's something that, he might be. He just doesn't have that job. Because, I don't think that he's, I think he's intelligent. I think he's just different. So, in other mm-hmm. words, there's a lot of people that could be an astrophysicist, but they're working at a coffee shop because that's where they're comfortable. That's what they want to do. I think
mm-hmm.
he might have a job here and there, but I think he's somebody that nobody has ever really noticed.
Right.
I think that even if he has a landlord, they're not even thinking about him. I don't
mm-hmm.
think his neighbors even know who he is. But somebody, if they start paying attention and they say, okay, everybody think of the neighbor to the right of you, think to the left
mm-hmm.
of you. Have you seen anybody that walks like this guy? Look how he does his left leg. Watch him walk. It's very distinct.
Yeah, it's very distinct. Yes, it is.
The way he's flipping
phone,
that's very distinct.
Yes, exactly. It really is. And, again, I feel
and
that
like,
if somebody...
Your folks, if you can understand what law enforcement is having to do right now, they know he was
uh-huh.
on the phone, right? So even
right.
if he's just clicking something, they're checking that tower. And they've got to call
right.
check every single number that came up then to
oh
the tower
God.
Of all four scenes now. Well, that's mammoth.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, you can't do that
that's
in 30 minutes.
That's huge. No.
It's huge.
That would take for
well, then that's
ever.
Not exactly right. Now they've got to figure out, okay, did this number come up anywhere else?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an undertaking that is just insane. They're looking at
yes.
every videotape, whether it's at somebody's house or on a bus or at an ATM. I mean, it's phenomenal what they're doing right now. And again, the reward money is big enough. If anybody knew who that cat was, they would have called.
Right now.
I mean,
I do believe somebody knows who he is, but they just haven't seen this
right.
video for whatever reason. And I think when they see it, they're going to go, hot
damn. And
they
together.
Yeah,
because I'll tell you what
exactly.
happens to a lot of people. They don't really know their neighbor. They're like, well, it kind of looks like that guy, but I don't know, and I don't want to be stupid, and I don't want to bother
mm-hmm.
law enforcement. And, so they second-guess themselves. But if five people call and say, look, I don't know this guy's name, but this is where he works, this is where he lives, I am telling
mm-hmm.
you, if you look at the four victims, point your finger right in the center, that East Avenue, anybody in that area know this guy? And that's what you're going to look at. He could be
so
a student. He could be anybody.
Right. If you are out at 9 o'clock at night in that same area of Tampa Bay,
mm-hmm.
what can the mm-hmm. residents do? I mean, some people have to be out for their work. They have to go pick
sure.
up their kids. I mean, there's a million reasons. What do you do?
Well, what's going to be happening is even businesses, everybody's going to start going, okay, y'all, we know what's happening. Nobody closes alone. So everybody's going to go and
right.
get free. Everybody's going to stay together. Law enforcement is already patrolling. They're going to be on every corner. But what's going to happen
mm-hmm.
is he's going to adapt because that's what happened. With Wayne Williams,
mm-hmm.
when he could not find a child any longer, he went to adults. So they've got
mm-hmm.
to be smart about it because there's also the reality is you can have dormant periods with this person.
Sure.
Right? We saw that again with Green River and whatnot. They may be dormant for years. So, and he could move. So
mm-hmm.
you just got to be really, really, cognizant of what's happening and very, very, very alert and smart. And you don't need to think, well, it ain't going to happen to me. That's just, he's already got a time.
Worst thing you
could think. 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
The worst thing you could think. Because what you could also
mm-hmm.
do is look out for other people. I mean, I'm standing
absolutely.
Here right here on the Miracle Mile in Miami right this minute, outside.
Mm-hmm.
what I'm doing
and,
right this minute. Talking to you.
And you're looking.
So again,
you're right.
You can't help it. So that's what you should do, not just for me, but there's people. I've already seen about 75 people walking by themselves. So you can watch them until they get out of sight, make sure they don't need anything. So you're looking out for you. You're looking out for everybody else. Before you leave, look out the window. Sure.
Right.
Everybody takes care of everybody. And again, they're going to catch him. But, you know, it might be a minute. But I'm telling you, they've got some of the best folks in the country on this thing.
Oh, I'm sure they do. And I would assume the FBI, have they been brought in on this? Or can they say? Or would they not be brought in? I'm not sure.
No, the FBI is brought in. No question.
Is it? Okay.
Yep.
Good.
Yep, no question.
Good. Well, Cheryl, I'm sure we'll have you on again when he's captured. Hopefully that will be next week. And
absolutely.
Just, you know, anything else going on? How are things with the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute going?
Oh, man, we are rolling. We have started looking at the Colonial Parkway murders. We were real involved with Mara Murray and the Oxygen Network. We've been very, very busy, but lots of good busy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the students are
good.
Working right now through their Thanksgiving break, so I'm real proud of them.
Oh, well, you are just an angel on earth, Cheryl. All you do for everybody, we can't thank you enough. So just enjoy yourself this weekend. Keep looking out for other people, and I know people will be looking out for you, Cheryl, okay?
Absolutely. All right, sugar, I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care now. Bye-bye. I love it when she calls me sugar. It just makes me feel all warm and homey and like I want to eat biscuits and gravy or something. In fact, that's a good idea. Actually, it's not. My heart will explode. But anyway, we'll be back next week. I am hoping we have caught this maniac, because imagine you're just out doing what you do, 8 o'clock at night, walking out, somebody shoots you in the head. It's your worst nightmare. It's what terrifies you when you're outside anyway. We don't need any more terrifying things to happen. But Cheryl had great advice for everybody, no matter where you're at. If you're standing there outside waiting for somebody, watch and make sure that if anybody's walking alone, that they're okay. Just keep an eye out for everybody. And I think that's great advice no matter what. Okay, kids, we'll see you at websleuths.com. And next week, same time, same place for Web Sleuths Radio. Take care now. Bye-bye.